Are you obsessed with Los Angeles? Head over heels in love with the City of Angels? Well, this is the podcast for you. At LifeHacks LA, we hack the best in arts, eats, and activities in Los Angeles. So join us and become an LA hacker. Baby, baby. Welcome, my friends, to another episode of LifeHacks LA. You know, I own dozens of books on Los Angeles, so I really, really love having authors on the podcast, especially for books that I personally own, and that's what's going to happen today because our guest is Andrea Richards, and she is the author of a book called The 500 Hidden Secrets of Los Angeles. I've had this book in my library for a while, and it's just like the title says. It's completely jam-packed with incredible LA secret places and activities. And I really like the way that she broke the book down into different categories because, you know, it's 500 things, but the way she's got it and kind of like this list format, it's really easy to digest. So it's a great interview. And if you love discovering LA hidden gems as much as I do, I know you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Andrea. As always, stay tuned as I reveal my own secret LA hack at the end of the episode. All right, LA hackers, enjoy this interview with Andrea Richards, and I'll see you on the other side. Hey, what's going on, LA hackers? Welcome to another episode of the LifeHacks LA podcast. And today we are interviewing Andrea Richards, the author of 500 Hidden Secrets in LA. How's it going today, Andrea?
It's going well, as well as it is for anyone, I think, right now.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. We're living in very strange times.
Yes, yes. And I don't know if you saw, but I'm really proud. I'm proud in a thousand ways to be an Angeleno right now, but I'm especially proud of our mayor who made a really great statement today, and now they offer free testing everywhere. So kudos to Garcetti.
Oh, wow. You know, I've been in a meeting all day today before this interview, so I haven't looked at the news at all. I mean, things change so quickly, but I hadn't heard that, so that's great news.
Yeah, it is great news. And I was really moved by his video because at the very end, he's like, we're going to beat this with LA love. And, you know, as a person who writes about Los Angeles all the time, and as for you, as a person who, you know, reports on Los Angeles all the time, we all clearly love our city a lot. So it's nice to feel that community.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll get through this. We'll get through this. Okay. Well, speaking of love of Los Angeles, I am holding your book in my hand, the 500 Hidden Secrets of Los Angeles. I love this book, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we do that, I wanted to know a little bit more about you, and our audience wants to know a little bit more about you. Where are you from originally, and how did you make your way to Los Angeles?
Okay. Well, I was a military brat growing up, so we moved quite a bit, and I was actually born in Italy, and grew up mostly in the South, on the East Coast, and then made my way to Los Angeles to go to CalArts for grad school. So that was around, I'm going to give away my age here, but around 1998. So I've been in LA now over 20 years. When I came to CalArts, I didn't expect that I would stay in Los Angeles. And then I fell in love with it. I met so many great people there. I fell in love with the city, and now I'm absolutely spoiled and can't imagine living anywhere else, much to the chagrin of my family members who are still back in North Carolina.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah, I was a military brat as well, and we lived in a lot of cold places. So when I moved here, it was kind of the same thing. I was like, okay, I'm not leaving.
It's real hard to leave that sunshine.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. What, in your opinion, and this is a super general question, so kind of like high level, what makes Los Angeles so unique and a special place to live?
I could probably think about that question for days and talk about it for hours. I mean, I think it's a unique city. But the number one thing that I think makes it a unique and interesting place to be is the kind of innovation and vibrancy of the people who live here. To me, that's really the standout thing is you have so many influences from so many different places. You know, this is a city of immigrants, and of migration. And what you see is what what you see is how vibrant that is, and how important that is, and what a great mix of cultures and influences and ideas that creates. So, I mean, to me, it's that's what makes LA special, is its vibrancy, its mix of cultures, its long history of having a mix of cultures here. I mean, it's people always talk about LA as being such a new city. You know, I was explaining to my 9-year-old last night, I was like, this was all Mexico, you know, and we were talking about that. And people always tend to denigrate Los Angeles for being so new and such a 20th century city, which, number one, I love a 20th century city. And number two, it's not just that, you know, there's long history here. And it's layered and complex, and it's not always happy. You know, it's just like it's real. And to me, there's always something more to discover. I always can learn more about the past. You know, you can always learn more about the future. It's a city of, you know, the past, the present, and the future.
Yeah, it really has a fascinating history. And getting back to what you said about the cultural diversity, one of the things I find interesting about Los Angeles is, you know, a lot of big cities have cultural diversity, but in Los Angeles, you could go a few blocks and feel like you're in a totally different town, you know what I mean? And get any type of food, and then you just go a few blocks over and same thing, right? Where in some cities, it feels like it's really far apart, those type of things, that type of cultural diversity.
Yeah, I don't think anyone gets over that first drive down like Wilshire Boulevard, or, you know, down Vermont or something, where you're suddenly, you know, in a 5-minute drive, seeing signs in so many different languages, you know, and traversing through, you know, Koreatown, and then, you know, there'll be a little break and it's Latino, and then there's a little break and it's something else. And it's just, I still remember that feeling of when I moved here 20 years ago, being excited by that. And that hasn't changed. And I think we're very fortunate in that. We're very fortunate that we're kind of all here. I'm really discovering the density of Los Angeles right now in a weird way, being stuck at home. Where suddenly, you know, I used to go for a hike in Griffith Park, you know, every other day or so, and would see maybe only a couple people. And then you suddenly realize how many people live here when we all, you know, got the orders to stay at home, but could still go to the park. And it would be just hundreds of people, which is now why, of course, they've closed the park. But I remember thinking, oh, yeah, 10 million people really do use this park. I just don't run into them. Yeah. Until now. So Los Angeles has that. I mean, it's a very interesting combination of being a very dense place, you know, but also having space around it. You know, it's an odd mix in so many ways. It's like the sunshine noir dichotomy. You know, we have a little bit of everything.
Very true. Anything you want, you can find here.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you about your book, The 500 Hidden Secrets of Los Angeles. Like I said, I've got it right here on my desk. I'm looking at it, and I love this book. And one of the things I love about it is that, as someone who writes about Los Angeles as well, there's so much to do here that it's kind of hard to classify it in ways that make sense, or arrange it in ways that make sense. And I like the way that you arranged this book. And I wanted to ask you about that. Like, was that a challenge, and why did you decide to do it in this kind of list format of five, you know, five best bookstores, five best tiki bars, et cetera?
Well, there's a couple of things you should know about that. Like, first off, much of this book just came from the tours I would give friends who came to town to visit. So, you know, I have some friends from Berlin who would come, and, you know, I'd be like, okay, today we're just going to go eat at food trucks. You know, that's what we're going to do today. Or today we're just going to go to libraries, like great public libraries that are so beautiful, they're going to blow you away. So a lot of the ideas in the book came from just a highly subjective, but you know, not tours that I would give to my own friends. Like, these are places that I want to go to. And then the structure of the book actually came from, it's part of a series, these 500 hidden secret books that are published by this company called Luster in Brussels. And they have a structure to the books that you follow, and then you get to make up the categories. So the categories were based on places I like to go to and places I like to take friends. And then the structure of the book was actually influenced by the series.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I actually take inspiration from this book because I write a weekly blog post, and it's similar. It's like list format, like five best, et cetera. And so, you know, with so much to do, sometimes it's hard to figure out what to write, funny enough. So yeah, I actually take inspiration from some of the subjects you have in here.
Oh, that's really nice. But I feel you too. I feel your pain. It's, I always feel like a bit of a fraud, you know, saying like, these are the, a friend of mine was like, it's called, the book title is The 500 Hidden Secrets, not 500 Secrets. It's The. And it made me laugh. I was like, oh God, it's not The. Like, these are, I mean, these are things I love to do in Los Angeles. And some of them, you know, depending on how long you've lived in LA, you know, some are more hidden than others. There are some things in here that are so iconic that I was constantly torn, you know, by, you know, with a book called The 500 Hidden Secrets. Do you only put in more obscure items, or do you still include iconic places? And I tried to just find my own balance of that. But it definitely was hard, and it makes me, you know, I understand sometimes when like hardcore Angelenos are like, you know what, they're not that hidden.
Yeah.
I take your criticism. I absolutely understand that. I presented the book to the LA Breakfast Club, which should be one of the hidden secrets of Los Angeles. It's so fascinating and interesting, and I recommend everyone listening go check it out. But they meet up in the Friendship Auditorium in Griffith Park. And it's this, you know, 100-year-old institution of people who get together for breakfast, I don't know, once a week, and they invite different people to come. And it's kind of a send-up of a private society. So they have all these inside jokes and weird rituals. But when they asked me to present the book, I was like, oh, my Lord. This is going to be a room full of people who know the most obscure places and facts and arcana about Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But they were all very kind and very nice. And to me, you know, the point of this book is it's got to be kind of twofold. I wanted it to be for people who'd never been to Los Angeles, and also for locals. So it's a middle path in a way of is the one that I chose for this. But it definitely pains me because there's so many things that I'll pass by on the street, or I'll go meet somebody somewhere and think like, oh my God, how could I have not put this in the book? So my big disclaimer is, you know, this is 500 hidden secrets. There are probably thousands of them in Los Angeles.
Yeah, definitely.
And everyone could write their own book. You know, we each have our own perspective on the city. This is mine, and it doesn't speak to everyone. I can't even try to. You know, there's just too much. The city is too big. So I hope everybody, you know, writes their own guide to Los Angeles.
Well, I've got two comments on that. I research this stuff all the time. I've been posting for like, 3 years daily, something to do in Los Angeles. And there's still a few things in here that I hadn't heard of before, or things that you reminded me of that I might've read once and then just kind of forgot about. So there's definitely some really hidden gems in here. And the second comment is, I feel your pain because, you know, my account is Life Hacks, right? So people are expecting like all these cool underground things. So I did a self-published journal, like 50 things to do in Los Angeles, where you could write about each thing. And it was the same thing. It was like, okay, you know, you want to do something secret, but how can you leave out like Griffith Park Observatory and stuff like that? That stuff that everyone knows about, but you know, if someone hasn't done that, how could you not recommend them going to do that? You know?
Yes. How could you not recommend it? And also, even living here, I mean, every time I go up to that observatory, I'm stunned. You know, it's like, how is such a creation possible? It's so beautiful. And I don't think it gets old. Yeah, you know? So that's the thing about iconic places is they don't get old. There's always some secret within it to still be discovered is my theory, that even the most mundane, you know, has the esoteric in it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so speaking of iconic locations, let's stick with that, because actually a lot of listeners of this podcast aren't from Los Angeles, but they want to visit or they regularly visit. So I wanted to ask you about iconic landmarks. Los Angeles has many of them that are super well known. What are a few that you think live up to the hype? If someone's never seen it, they've heard about it, they've seen it on TV or in the movies, and they're coming to visit, what are a handful, two or three, that you think actually live up to the hype?
Well, definitely the observatory, which we already covered. For first-time visitors, the thing that always kills them, I think, is the proximity of nature to the city. And for that, I love Vista Hermosa Park. You know, that's right, kind of an Echo Park. Off Glendale. And then I also love one experience that I don't think ever pales for anyone is seeing Marty and Elaine at the Dresden Room. I mean, classic, iconic crooners you saw them in Swingers if you've seen that movie, but there's nothing like experiencing it live. Another thing, I think the kind of the neon, you know, driving down Wilshire Boulevard is like a time capsule. You know, if you enter the right places, it's not there anymore, but I love taking people to the HMS, well, the HMS Bounty is there, but I love taking people there and then showing them, you know, across the street where the Ambassador Hotel used to be. I mean, I think those are my kind of iconic sites.
Yeah, those are some good ones.
Yeah, some of them aren't even there anymore, like the Ambassador, but you can still feel it. You know, there's still a feeling of this place that was there and the history. I think it permeates, you know, up. Almost anything I'm still interested in going to, like, you know, the Chinese theater. I get freaked out by the crowds and everything there, but it's still a beautiful place. It's an amazing place. And it's even better if you see the man's Chinese and then walk across the street and go to the Egyptian and talk about Sid Grauman and how that was the first theater he built. And, you know, and the Egyptian is such an amazing place to see films with the American Cinematheque. So, I mean, even the most kind of touristy place of Hollywood Boulevard, I think has untold of hidden secrets that you just have to be interested and mine. And then I never ever go to the Egyptian Theater without walking down to Larry Edmonds Bookstore, which is one of, you know, the, to me, the greatest film bookstore on the planet. Probably rivals one that I went to in Paris. I can't remember the name of, but Larry Edmonds is like, it's from every part of the experience, from walking in the door to talking to the people who work there, to seeing what's on the shelves, to walking outside and seeing where you are. I mean, that to me is an iconic Hollywood experience.
Is that right on Hollywood Boulevard?
It is. It's like right, a couple blocks from the Egyptian.
Wow. We're so lucky. We have some amazing bookstores, even though almost all bookstores are closed down. I mean, we've got the Last Bookstore. We've got Romans. We got the one you mentioned, a few other ones.
Oh, there's so many great bookstores in Los Angeles. You know, and the thing is really to spend as much money as you can in them so they stick around.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So I think you might have answered this with that last question, but I'll ask anyway. Do you think there's any spots that are kind of under the radar that people don't really appreciate and you're kind of surprised by it? You know, they're not as popular as you think they should be.
That's a good question. I don't know. I feel like people do appreciate, more and more things are being appreciated, you know, and that's thanks so much to the efforts of people like you, you know, to point them out to us. You know, I'm thinking about, I love the Los Angeles Conservancy. And if you haven't done one of their downtown walking tours, they're so great. And they're so, you know, they just did this whole thing about 1970s architecture in Los Angeles. And I think a lot of it probably has gotten canceled due to the COVID stuff. But they're great about like the Westin Bonaventure Hotel.
Amazing, you know? Yeah.
Which is so incredible. And if you haven't been, there's a revolving, you know, cocktail restaurant on the top that's just like straight out of the 70s. It's so great. It's all of my childhood dreams of like urban world come true. So it's so beautiful and so great. And I feel like, you know, when I first moved to LA maybe 20 years ago and someone took me there, just people being like, oh my God, this place is so ugly and it's so terrible and ha ha ha, Arnold Schwarzenegger, True Lies or whatever the movie was filmed there. And now I feel like we've kind of, thanks to the effort of preservationists and architectural historians and also thanks to the renewal of downtown and more people living there and that now the Bonaventure feels safe in a way that it didn't. Not I mean safe from like the wrecking ball. I don't mean, it feels like it will be preserved. Whereas at one point in time there might have been a time where people didn't appreciate the architecture, or didn't appreciate its kind of cultural relevancy. I feel like now people are getting a little more in tune with that. Although I say that, and I just think about the parts of LACMA that have just been destroyed, which I'm really heartbroken about that. It makes me really sad because it was such, the Bing Theater to me was such a beautiful mid-century piece of architecture. And I saw so many great movies there that it's really sad to see it gone.
I wasn't even aware of that. So that was on the LACMA grounds, you're saying?
Yeah. You know, they're doing this big building project at LACMA where
they've been doing that for years, right on Fairfax, right?
Yeah, just last week, I think, tore down the Bean Theater, which was right at the front on Wilshire. And, you know, I don't know, people, you know, architecture is like anything where it has its fads and trends. And sometimes we're a little late to recognize the importance of it.
Yeah, you make some good points, especially about downtown. I think that movement of the conservatories saying, hey, let's save these buildings. They're iconic and they're landmarks. And we need to keep them to the history of LA has been amazing. I mean, they've saved a lot of buildings down there.
Yeah, they have. They have. And I especially love, there was one group of the conservancy called it was called ModCom. And it was a special wing that just looked at modern structures and modern buildings. And, you know, they worked so hard and saved so many great mid-century landmarks. You know, and for generations now, I think we'll be thankful to them for that. You know, and that's a couple places, you know, that I just adore and completely love are restaurants that preservationists saved. And one in particular has a great story. It's called the Idle Hour, and it's in North Hollywood. And it's a example of programmatic architecture, right? So that's where the building kind of resembles what it's going to sell. And it was built to look like a barrel, and it was a beer hall, right? So like I don't know if it's supposed to be a whiskey barrel or like a beer barrel. I don't know. But anyways, it was built, I won't get all the details right, but I think in the 40s. And I remember seeing it, you know, driving, I think it's on Lancashire, driving down Lancashire probably 20 years ago, probably getting lost on my way to Kellards. And it was in disrepair. And I think there was an amazing story about a woman living there who had been a flamenco dancer and maybe she taught dance classes there or something. But then it went to auction. You know, she passed away and sadly the building went to auction and it's kind of falling apart. And Chris Nichols, who, you know, writes for Los Angeles Magazine and is a great preservationist, saw that it was for sale, told this fellow, Bobby Green, who who has is part of a group called the 1933 group that runs bars and restaurants. And he had just, I think, opened, I'm forgetting the name of it right now, but it's
in Park Bowl.
The Bigfoot Lodge.
Bigfoot Lodge, yeah.
Yeah. And so Chris called him up and told him about this building. And I think Bobby went to the auction and he bid on it and he got it. And then they reopened it. They restored it and they reopened it. And it's such a fantastic place. Like, please go get a cocktail there at as soon as it reopens at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and sit on the patio and just behold this stunning building that has been there, you know, since the 40s and is so uniquely LA. And what's rare in life is that you kind of have a story of a building that has such, you know, its origins are interesting, its story is interesting, and then its preservation to me is also like it's the cherry on the, you know, on the sundae here. It's also a great story of how preservation works. So the Idle Hour in North Hollywood, that's in the book, and it's one of my favorite places.
Yeah, that's an amazing place, and I really admire what Bobby Green and 1933 Group is doing. You know, they've got the Highland Park Bowl. They just did the Formosa Cafe. I think they saved that and they refurbished it.
Yeah, they sure did. I mean, I'm loving that combination of preservation and, you know, and commerce. I think it's about, you know, creative reuse. And they're doing it, and they're doing it with such such care and such, I think, appreciation of authenticity and originality. I'm a big fan of theirs too.
Yeah, exactly. I think they do a really good job of preserving it and then making it modern and hip and cool for this time. So people want to go there and appreciate the history of it. But, you know, you can still have a good time just like you would at any bar, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even museums shouldn't be museums at this point.
Yeah. It's all about interactive entertainment.
Yeah, really, really. Just you want to have a living history. You don't necessarily want everything to feel like an archaeological dig in the past. Although I really like those too.
Yeah. We just talked about one, but my next question actually was going to be about restaurants and bars and speakeasies, because you have a lot of them in your book, some pretty amazing ones. And as we know, all restaurants are shut down for, you know, past 2 months. So we want to give them shout outs as much as we can. And hopefully some of our favorite places will still be there when this is all over. But
I know that's my terror, you know, especially working on this restaurant book right now, which has 50 restaurants in it. And I just, I'm holding high hopes that all of them get to reopen. And there are ways to support places now, like buying gift cards and ordering, you know, from their pantries and things like that. But there's so many great, I wish I could go out every night in Los Angeles and try out a different restaurant or a different bar, because there's so many great ones. And some of them, you know, there's plenty I haven't even made it to yet. But you know, like, for instance, a kind of example of something that was in between the iconic and hidden for me was like the Prince, you know, in Koreatown, which has been used as a location for so many TV shows. You know, it's pretty well known, but there's no experience like going there. You know, it's just a great bar to be in. It's great to get a scallion pancake while you're there. You know, it's just a fantastic place. Yeah. So there's so many things like that, that I really appreciate the opportunity of doing this book to be able to share with other people.
I'm really looking forward to that book. Yeah, I've read about the Prince, but that's actually one I haven't been to yet. So that's on my list of must-haves.
Yeah, check
now.
It out as soon as you can. It's great.
Okay, cool. Now I wanted to ask you in general, you know, this is Life Hacks LA. So in general, do you have any tips about living and enjoying in Los Angeles? Just general hacks about living in LA?
General hacks. I think the general hack maybe is to think, you know, to try to be a pedestrian as much as possible. I mean, I think the city, certainly it was designed and at a certain period in time to reveal itself to people by car, but now it's really best revealed by walking, I think. So my hack is to, you know, drive somewhere where I can park, or, you know, take public transportation somewhere where I can then just walk around and explore for a good while. I never eat, you know, a big meal all at one place, because that cuts down on the number of places you can go. So, you know, I'm big into snacking and having a drink and then moving on to the next place. My husband always laughs, because if we actually have a date night, he'll be like, "Where do you want to go?" And I have a list of 5 or 6 places. Yeah. And he's always like, "What, are you crazy?" And I'm like, "Sometimes, you know what, just let me run in and see what it's like. And then maybe I'll call you if I want you to come in."
You're doing like an eating tour every night.
Yeah, it's kind of. I mean, but there's so much to see, that you have to be efficient with your time, and you have to be efficient with your money. So that's one of my hacks, is try to walk and discover things on foot. Have appetizers at one place and at 3 different places instead of eating one big meal somewhere. And also just talk to everyone. I mean, so many of the places that I've end up putting in the book or things that I love are tips that came from other people. You know, I mean, I'm very fortunate that I have some great friends who are lifelong Angelenos who, you know, took me under their wings when I moved here and showed me their town. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, there's definitely people that have been here a long time or from here all have their secret little spots and their secret little hacks that they do. If you can get them to share them with you.
Yeah, and it's great, because everyone has their own subjective relationship to the city. You know, everyone has their own experience. So, you know, they're going to be like, "Oh, the best fruit comes from, you know, the guy at Barnsdale," or "No, it's over here." And it's over there. And there's like, you know, 6 different threads that you can follow. Why not follow all of them?
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to ask you, I mean, it's obvious that you love Los Angeles. You've been here 20 years. You've written a couple books about it. So I was hoping you could take us through your perfect day. Like, imagine you don't have to work. You don't have to write. You just have the whole day to yourself, from getting up to going to bed. Can you take us through what, like, the perfect dream day in LA would be for you?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yes, this is a funny question, because I just had this dream last night. It was so, it's so weird, but I guess, again, in the midst of this pandemic, it's, you know, a lot of people are having very vivid dreams, but I had a very vivid dream that I was in a car with some dear friends of mine, Tina Pellis, who's a partner that I write with a lot, and we have a publishing company together. Another friend of mine, Nina Weiner, who is an editor at Tashin, and her former boss, Jim Hyman, who writes great books about Los Angeles. So these are the people in the car with me in my dream last night. And we went to, Jim like pulled his car up someplace that was like a mid-century hamburger stand, and said, "If you go to the counter and you order the milkshake, but say you want it with a sting, they'll give you a scorpion cocktail." And this was, you know, this was all fantasy. This is all a dream I had last night. But when I woke up, I was so happy, and it was such a reminder of that feeling of discovery, you know, and that feeling of a hidden secret or a treasure, like the special cocktail that you get at the special place.
I was going to say, it's a dream, but it sounds like something that could totally be real in Los Angeles.
And it was real, you know, like I had this dream, because when I first moved to LA, you know, Nina, Tina, and Jim would take me places, or Nina was working on a book at the time that was about, it was called Hungry and Thirsty and like places to eat and drink in Los Angeles. So that was kind of my life, was people telling me to order this at this place, and they were all fantastic and amazing. And I guess, you know, I guess I, in 20 years, I haven't gotten past that great feeling of discovery.
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah. So I don't think that answers your question about what a dream day is for me, but that is like a what the literal dream is for me.
That's the literal dream. No, I think it does in the sense that, especially for someone like you and I who constantly research things, a dream for you would be discovering something new. Like you said, when you're walking around in Los Angeles City in your car and you come across something that you didn't know before, or some secret menu item or some secret speakeasy or whatever, that's like a dream, you know, something new.
Yeah. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a real secret, you know, just secret to you. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like my friend Tina introducing me to Filipino breakfast. You know, it's like, now I get it. you know, it was a secret to me only because I'm not Filipino and I didn't know about it. But when you have, you know, when you're part of a larger community and people introduce you to things, then suddenly I'm like, oh, I know what I want to order there. And I know what restaurant I want to go to. So it's, I don't know if it's about secrets as much as it's about sharing.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the beauty of living in Los Angeles. You said that early on in the interview, is the diversity. Luckily for me, I grew up with some Filipino friends and I discovered Filipino breakfast a long time ago. It's amazing.
Oh my God.
The eggs and the rice and all that stuff. But
I mean, why is anyone eating anything else for breakfast?
Well, to be fair, I don't know how healthy it is. So like if you were to eat that every day, but.
Yeah. But anyways, I just think, you know, this is a city of millions of people and there's millions of things waiting to be discovered. So I'm thrilled that I get to, you know, it's like, how lucky am I that I get to write about this stuff? I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And you've shared some amazing things with us. And I just wanted to ask you if there's anything that I didn't already ask you or that we didn't talk about that you want to share about LA Adventures in general.
I mean, I just, at this point in time, I just want to encourage everyone to have them, like, just go out and, you know, as soon as we can get out of our houses, you know, go outside and see what's there. It's an amazing place. And all these businesses are really going to need our help. So, you know, I'm going to be thrilled to not cook a meal at home for, you know, 6 months.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, and just to eat out as much as possible and to go out as much as possible, as much as is safe. Just to you know, to save the mom and pop businesses that make LA what it is. I mean, it's, you know, it's always sad when you see the same chain restaurants, you know, moving into certain strips, and I don't want to see that happen. And we're going to have to be activists in terms of spending our money in the right places.
That's great advice, Andrea. Now, like we mentioned, you wrote one of my favorite books. I've got it sitting right here, The 500 Hidden Secrets of Los Angeles. And you have another book coming out about LA restaurants. Can you tell us where our audience can go to find out more about those books and to keep up with you?
Yes, I can. I mean, the books are available at most, you know, they're available at all the bookstores. They have international distribution. So, you know, my favorite place to buy them are, of course, our local bookstores. So places like Skylight, Book Soup, Romans, you know, all the local, Larry Edmonds. I don't know if they're carried there, but ask them if they would. Yeah, so all the local bookstores. I am really bad, maybe because I like to go out so much. I'm terrible with I don't even have a website. I'm trying to fix that. I am part of a publishing collective and a creative collective that's called Narrated Objects. And we have a website, and we also, that's the publishing company I have with my friend Tina. And she is great. We have an Instagram, we have a website. And we did a book about P22, the mountain lion that lives in Griffith Park. And we also did a book called Dear Seller, which is love letters to Los Angeles, real estate love letters to Los Angeles. So I'm definitely continuing my interests in writing about Los Angeles. And she and I are trying to create, with Narrated Objects, a real venue for other people to tell stories about Los Angeles as well.
That's very cool. And I can attest that you are not that easy to find online, because I had to do some digging to find you to do this interview. But
Well, Stefan, I appreciate your digging. Thank you. I didn't mean to make myself a hidden seeker, but I guess I kind of have.
Yeah, I was like, this author is a hidden seeker. I've got to track her down. But okay. What I'll do is I did find your narrated objects, and I'll put the links in the show notes so everyone can easily find you guys online.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks so much. And thanks for doing what you're doing. It's great. I think we're all boosters of Los Angeles.
We all love LA. That's what we have in common.
Yeah. And I know every once in a while, I'm overcome with a moment of panic of like, oh my gosh, should I be talking about all this so much? Because maybe just more people are going to move here and I'm not going to be able to afford it.
Yeah. Well, I think that ship has sailed. There's nothing you can do about that. All right, Andrea, it was so great having you on. And I encourage everyone to go out there and buy your books because if you love Los Angeles, because they're amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
Okay, we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back. This is Stefan, and I hope you enjoyed that interview with Andrea Richards, the author of one of my favorite LA books called The 500 Hidden Secrets of Los Angeles. You can find out more about Andrea, as she said on the episode, at narratedobjects.com. That's narratedobjects.com. Or if you want to pick up one of her LA-based books, you can do it at any local bookstore, as she recommended, because we want to support those LA bookstores. All right, on to my hack. So I'm going to do something a little different today, and I'm going to have Andrea's book help me out with my hack. We talked about on the episode, one of the things I like about her book is, you know, it's 500 things to do in Los Angeles total, but she kind of has it broken down into these different categories of five, you know, five of the best this, five of the best that. So one of my favorites in here is five bars for more than drinks. So she's actually got 40 places to have a drink in Los Angeles, and that's broken down into a list of five, and one of them is five bars for more than drinks. So I'm just gonna read those off because I thought this was a pretty cool list, and you know, all five things on this particular list are things I wanna check out. So five bars for more than drinks. The first, she has the Dresden Room in Los Feliz. And she actually talked about that on this episode, and it's where Marty and Elaine perform, these veteran lounge singers from the movie Swingers. The next one is Good Times at Davy Wayne's. You might have heard me talk about these guys on the podcast before. It's Mark and Johnny Houston, the Houston brothers, and they're the ones who've created this whole slew of LA speakeasies, and one of the best ones that she's got here is Good Times at Davy Wayne's. It's in Hollywood. Kind of hard to describe, but it's kind of got like a 1970s theme, and I don't know, you'll just have to look it up. But the next one is Highland Park Bowl, and again, this list is five bars for more than drinks. Highland Park Bowl is another incredible spot, and it's a restored bowling alley from the 1920s. It's kind of got that speakeasy vibe as well. And that's in Highland Park. The next one is Jumbo's Clown Room. And this is a kind of an odd one. It's a pole dancing club. So quasi strip club, it's in Hollywood, but it's just got this raucous, crazy rock and roll atmosphere. And you know, if that's not your thing, then so be it, but you definitely want to check it out because it's just, you know, it's like for a crazy night out or whatever. But Jumbo's Clown Room on Hollywood Boulevard. The last one is The Spare Room. I've actually been here a few times. This place is cool. It's located in the Roosevelt Hotel, and it's a gaming parlor, and also it kind of has that Prohibition era vibe to it, and it's really just, I think it's like one or two lanes, but it's really, really small, but it's kind of a scene. So anyway, I just wanted to read those five off to you because I really liked that category of her book, Five Bars for More Than Drinks. All right, that's all I got for you this week, and come back and see me next week, and we'll have another episode for you. All right, take care.